Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Kristen, your mom.
And we're going to be covering Bridgerton Season 3, Episode 2, How Bright the Moon.
How Bright the Moon, yeah. And we have our usual disclaimers, and they include that there will be cursing. There will be spoilers.
If you haven't seen part one, there will be spoilers.
Or if you haven't read the book either.
Yeah, we will be mentioning some.
I'm sure we will. And we are having things to drink. What are you having to drink, Natalie?
I am having a Rossini cocktail, which is strawberry mix and Prosecco.
Which is frothy and happy.
Yes.
I am having something from the Regency Book of Drinks. It seemed appropriate, especially based on reactions toward the end of this episode, and it's called Thunderclap. And it contains 2 ounces of rye whiskey, 3/4 ounce simple syrup, 3/4 ounce lemon juice, the white of 1 egg, and a little bit of ruby port floated on the top. It is cool looking. It is very whiskey forward. So if you're not into whiskey, it's probably not your thing, but it did seem very appropriate for what I was seeing. So there we are. And let's get into
Season 3, Episode 2 of Bridgerton, How Bright the Moon. Lady Danbury and the Queen are talking about the gifts that the ambitious mamas are sending to get into the Queen's good graces and to make her it finally name a diamond this season.
They include a giant pineapple that's
like
diamond
a,
encrusted.
Yes, yeah, encrusted it's pineapple.
Ridiculous. It is ridiculous.
The Queen doesn't want to choose a diamond, however, and she even mentions that Edwina... from last season, she made a great match abroad, does that have to do with you setting her up with the prince from last season?
On first season, you mean?
The first season, but like she mentioned it last season.
That's
what I mean.
True. So, but it would
I
be
don't
so
know
what, nice.
I feel like she would have mentioned it, but either way, good for Edwina. And she doesn't want to do what Lady Whistledown wants her to do. She doesn't want to do the expected thing. But Lady Danbury's like, well, but everyone's expecting it. And she's also kind of trying to push for it because she has somebody in mind that she wants to be the diamond, or as they're going to call it, the sparkler. Okay.
Yeah.
That's so much better.
No.
You could have just called it like an emerald. Like, do it like an Elvis thing of like just choosing a different gem. But
no,
you know,
we're not doing that. So.
And then we go over to a montage where Lady Whistledown is talking over it. She is talking about stories of spinsters marrying unexpectedly, including Kate, who was on the shelf because she was a ripe old age of 26.
It's like ridiculous the way they talk about these things. And of course, that is a theme that gets expanded on in this episode. It's just sickening.
She also mentions that about the new Duke of Kent, not Duke, sorry, the Baron of Kent.
Yeah.
Not that high up. Yeah. So we see Alice and the family touring their huge house and treating it like a museum. Like, don't touch anything. We might, because they feel self-conscious, because I don't blame them because it doesn't feel like their house. They also, apparently, Will and Alice have separate bedrooms, which they could just ignore, but no.
Well, right now, they're told they have to have separate bedrooms. It's like, oh, this is how it is done. Because it's kind of like that thing from the 60s where, like, couples were supposed to sleep in separate beds.
Yeah.
Like, this is ridiculous. Just because they do it on TV doesn't mean you need to do it.
This isn't I Love Lucy. Let's just chill.
Yeah, you know, it's just dumb.
Anyway.
Don't live like that. That's stupid.
Portia, Lady Featherington, is so worried about the succession now because, like, she just has no faith in her daughters to procreate.
The daughters and their husbands are in the background catching grapes on the couch. They look insane.
Also, like, don't they have anything else better to do than hang out at their mom's house? Like, I mean,
and mentally redecorate.
Yeah. I mean, like, whatever. She's worried about the line of succession, and because of what happened with the Baron of Kent and all that stuff, she's like, oh, I wouldn't want like a random wrestler inheriting our fortune or whatever.
Right, like son of a boxer, which is what they're talking about with the Mondriches. It's like, oh, no.
So she's worried about that. We go over to a promenade with Benedict, Colin, and Eloise. they're walking along, and as they do at the beginning of this season, they're talking about changes.
And Eloise is like, oh, everyone's not here to look at me, they're here to look at Colin, basically. Yeah.
But Colin's also like, but you've changed too. And she's like, I'm not going to acknowledge that. But
we're not going to talk about me. We're going to talk about you.
And I feel like
make it sound negative.
And I feel like I didn't mention this in the last episode very succinctly, but Eloise has specifically not told Colin why her and Penelope aren't hanging out anymore. Yes. She has just said, we have drifted apart. That comes back later.
Right.
So
multiple times.
Then Colin leaves the group to go promenade with Penelope.
And Eloise is looking at it like, oh my God. And
you know, like, what the hell? It's right. Like, they were friends before. Like, I don't, whatever.
Well, but he has a conversation with Penelope and they talk about Whistledown, and Penelope says, oh, she's never been more wrong. Mm-hmm. And Colin's like, well, you know, soon she will be found out and we'll all have our revenge.
We'll dance on her grave.
Dance like, on her grave. Like, yeah. So he talks to her about testing out her skills, and she's like, well, I could show you. And he's like, no, not me, Tim.
Oh, not me.
And she's like, what skills? I don't have any skills. And he's like, you can bat your eyelashes and use a fan and that kind of stuff. Sometimes that's all it takes. So she goes up to these guys and she has very violent fanning, and they're like, are you okay?
So she's just composed.
She's like, no, I'm fine, the weather. And then later, you get to see her go home.
She goes home and flops on the bed, which is a common theme, actually, in this season.
Yes, it is.
Anyway, Maggie, Danbury, and Violet are having tea with Francesca. Hyacinth also joins them a little bit later, and are talking about suitors who enjoy music, much like Francesca does. Mm-hmm. Lady Danbury also says, the queen might still name an incomparable of the season, so we can promote you in that way because I have the insider knowledge.
Well, right, and it could be anyone. Hyacinth's like, anyone? And they're like,
anyone who's been presented Hyacinth, not you, but you wait your turn. And then we go over to Portia again. Portia talks to the girls about their progress. Prudence hasn't been doing it with her husband because she didn't like it the first time but Philippa is like, oh yeah, we've been so passionate, we've been going to many different establishments. And she's like, wait, what do you mean? And she's like, oh, we've been going to like different shops to shop for like new furniture for the house once I win.
And we're just kind of like,
okay,
what does that have to
don't do? Put the cart before the horse, you need to get pregnant first, and it has to be a male heir, so good luck with that.
Yeah.
So Portia tells them they have to just try harder. Colin
is fed with two women.
Is being a man whore at a brothel in a threesome.
With two women. I mean, up until now, it's usually just somebody with one. But no, Colin's special.
I'd like to pause it. And this does seem kind of out of character for Colin. The Colin we've seen thus far.
On the show,
because,
yes.
Like, I mean, in the first season, he seemed pretty wet behind the ears, kind of like didn't know what was going on. Like I'm sure he had like done something or other, because like there was a talk with Anthony about, oh, I should have taken you to more brothels or whatever.
Two brothels in general.
Yeah, two brothels in general. And so he seemed pretty just kind of virginish.
Aware. Yeah.
Aware, but not quite like as experienced as maybe a rake like Antony or right. Simon. And then season two rolls around.
Benedict,
and
for them.
Benedict's just always been a man whore. He seems the more the type to do an orgy because he's done them in the past.
Right, exactly. And but Colin, well, anyway.
And then season two rolls around and he's gone traveling. Penelope was worried that he had been with women, but he was like, oh no, I've just been discovering something about myself. And so it's like, okay, it was that kind of journey. Me, I get it. But then now he's just a man horse strutting about town and going to brothels and having threesomes. I'd like to posit that the reason it is a threesome is probably because he wants it to be more impersonal.
We're gonna get to that.
We'll talk about that. There's more stuff about that later.
Right.
So he goes to the market afterwards and talks to Penelope, who is feeling disheartened about her lessons because she failed so miserably before.
Right. And what he tells him is very kind.
Yeah.
What he says to her is, look, you know what to do because you knew how to meet me. You were so charming the first time you met me, and your hat flew off when I was riding.
That is also something from books. I'm glad they included that. Obviously, they aged them down, but it was really sweet.
Right. But he's like, but the reason that you didn't have trouble then is you weren't self-conscious. Mm-hmm. You weren't like on the marriage mark. You were too young to have that adult self-consciousness. And she's like, but that's just what we've got to do now. And his response is, look, I went abroad.
And, we know.
Yeah. And what I learned about myself is that I didn't have to meet anyone else's expectations of who Colin Bridgerton is. Mm-hmm. And so I got to, you know, basically try on a lot of different personalities and, you know, create my own expectations for myself. Mm-hmm. So I can come back and be this person that I am now, which is really pretty cool.
Yeah. And he was like, my true self. And I'm like, sweetie, this is not your true self. You know it, but
sort of.
It might be
it
a little
facet of it.
Yeah, it might be an element of it, but it's not 100% there.
Well, that's so he asks her, why is it that you want to get married? Why is it, why now? Why is this such a big deal to you? And what she says is, I want a husband so that I can be comfortable in the world.
And free.
And free. And he's like, well, where have you been most comfortable?
Well, first of all, he says, finding comfort in yourself will help you find the comfort elsewhere.
Right.
Which is great advice. You need to follow it, Colin. And odd how that happens. Yeah. And he's like, hey, where do you feel most comfortable? And she's like, well, I used to feel most comfortable during my Sunday teas at Bridgerton House. And that's also kind of a callback to the books where she would always come over for tea. And mm-hmm. I could say literally anything is about this callback to the book and you wouldn't know. But either way, I assume. Either way. So, but obviously that's not an option now because Eloise and her are on the outs.
And he asks, he kind of is like, I'm really sorry about that. You know, no one seems to want to talk about it. And Penelope doesn't want to talk about it either.
And she's like, oh, well, I have to go now. Bye. And her maid just has this long look at Colin. I'm just like, are you the new Rose? But I don't know your name. So yeah. Unnamed maid, what you doing? She comes in clutch later. So fair enough. Anyway, Will and Alice miss each other in their
bedrooms,
which is easily remedied, but whatever.
The storyline is dumb. But Alice, Mrs. Mondrich,
yeah.
What's her name?
Alice.
Alice goes to see Madame Jellicoe. She's going to get these fancy dresses that they inherited redone, but they're hideous. Madame Jellicoe is like, look, I can do something with this material, but you really should like get new stuff. The Bridgertons then show up at Madame Delacroix's, and
specifically Francesca, Eloise, and Violet.
Right. And so Violet's all excited because there's this lovely French blue satin. She wanders off. Francesca and Eloise have a talk about the whole marriage smart thing. And Eloise is like, oh, you're going to hate it more than I do. And Francesca's like, nope, I just want to get married quickly. So
the one thing
leave
Eloise,
me the fuck alone. Yeah.
The one thing Eloise doesn't want is the one thing Francesca does.
Right.
And which is a fun little
juxtaposition. Yeah.
That's what I was going with. The juxtaposition. And obviously neither one of them aren't, but you can also tell they're on the same kind of level of enthusiasm in a way for like societal functions at this point. But you know, obviously they have different reasons.
Right.
And so Francesca's like, yeah, but I obviously ever since like Lady Danbury told Violet about the now contest to be the diamond of the season, she's going to be relentless about it. And I really don't want that. I just want to find a husband in my own time,
because,
fairly quickly.
Because they think that they've got an inside track because no one else knows.
Yes.
And so Eloise is like, let's get you some competition
so that you don't have to worry so much.
And so she then goes and tells other girls in the shop, hey, the queen's looking for somebody, keep going.
Yeah. And so we go over to Bridgerton House in the garden. The family, aka Hyacinth, Gregory, Colin, and Benedict, are playing cards, and Hyacinth is kicking everyone's ass
because she's awesome.
I love it so much.
I do too.
Then a footman shows up and is like signals to Colin that someone's here. And so Colin goes off while Hyacinth is still kicking everyone's ass. And yeah. Benedict is just enjoying everything immensely.
Penelope has shown up at the house.
Yes. And Colin takes her to the drawing room to make her more comfortable because that's what she said. And because you take everything very literally, Colin. You realize it wasn't the drawing room that made her comfortable. It was the company, right?
Right. And of course, being alone with you. And this is part of what I find just hilarious about this show. It's like, you can't be alone with a man. It's like, she's been promenading with him.
The maid was left outside.
Yeah, it's like, this is insane. But okay, it's totally fine right now. I don't see
No, promenading. I mean, like, they were kind of.
No, they were not chaperones.
No, but that, no, not, at the market though they were.
They were. The maid was there at the market.
So that's a step in the right direction. Anyway, he makes them pretend they're at a ball. He like sets the scene for her, and even got some lemonade poured just like for dramatic effect.
Right. Well, see, part of what I like about even when he's talking to her about the setup, you can see how much more comfortable she is. Like she's got her hip out. She's kind of like moving around. She's comfortable in her body. Just talking to him about this stuff. She's like, oh, what? So we've got so-and-so over here.
Am I going to flirt with the cellist?
And he's like, no. You're going to be here at the refreshment table.
Where this handsome suitor is going, you're going to try to woo this handsome suitor. And she's just like, wait, you?
And he's like, yeah.
Sure. You've known me forever. And she's like, that's what's going to make it so weird. Right. I find that very funny. Yeah. And especially considering earlier she was just like, oh, I can practice on you. And then he's like, oh, no, not me. And now it's the tables have turned already.
Yeah,
and exactly. It's like, practice on me, Penelope.
And he says, talk to me like you didn't care what my response was going to be.
She also opens up about how she, and I find this very much is kind of attributed to me as well.
I think it's true for most people.
A lot of people, yeah. But she's just like, I know that I can be witty and smart and intelligent, and I can do that. But somewhere between my head and my mouth, something goes wrong. Yes. Somewhere between my heart and my mouth, something just goes wrong, and I end up saying the wrong thing. And I know I can be all these things, but something's just blocking that. But she obviously doesn't really feel that way around Colin, which is really nice.
Right. We are going to see this too. Like when she's one-on-one with people, she's fine. She is not fine when it's three or four guys.
Oh yeah.
And that was part of the issue with the fan thing. There were three guys and it just made stress too many people.
And also she knew she was being watched by Colin to like be assessed. And so she wanted to really ham it up, but it didn't work. Yeah. Anyway, obviously this is the clip that was released very, very early on. And it's just of, it's her looking into his eyes and she's like, your eyes are such a remarkable shade of blue, but they shine brightest when you're kind. And then they have a really nice, intense moment of eye contact. And then they're just like, oh, okay. That was a bit much.
He's like, you're very direct. Okay.
She's like, yeah, I'm sorry. And then we hear Francesca and Eloise are back from the Modiste and Colin has her run and hide in the study. Even though the study, she would have to cut across the hallway that Eloise and Francesca might be walking up, but that's, Colin's an idiot. But so she runs into the study. I don't know whose study this is. I guess it's Colin's study.
Well, I mean, Colin's stuff is in there.
His
coat is in there in his diary.
It's a different study than the one that Kate and Anthony were using, so whatever.
That was Anthony's office. Yeah. So Penelope sees his coat and she goes to stroke it and sees his diary. And she starts to read. And the writing is about being in Paris. And at first it's kind of general, but then it's about like basically having sex.
I just wrote, Penelope finds his journal open and reads some of his erotica.
That's kind of the way it reads.
And so me and my mom started making this joke about how he would be under the pen name Lord Whistledown and publish his erotica.
Yep. Anyway, it's the more intimate side of the Lady Whistledown column.
And he's like, oh, the women in Paris are probably the most beautiful. And she's like, okay. And then so she turns away and then she's like, well, actually, I want to hear more.
So he's talking about stroking skin and moonlight.
And
how something so intimate can still feel very distant.
And that's interesting because it's obviously that has to do with like the threesome that I brought up and like the whole distance thing, even though it's not making love, it is just fucking. it's just doing it for
super pleasant.
Regardless, it's just sex. How about that?
Yeah.
And then Colin comes in and I noticed this on my first watch that Penelope left her like shawl on like a chair or something, which I thought was going to be caught by Eloise, but I'm glad Colin at least had the frame of mind to at least grab the shawl and like bring it in. into the office.
Yeah. And so he comes in and he's mad because she's literally holding the journal. It was literally on a stand that she could read it from, but she picks it up anyway. And he comes in and is like, "Wait, what the fuck? Why were you reading my journal? That's not your place.
It's not for anybody.
It's for me. And she's just like, "I'm sorry, but it was good."
It's really good all written. And he's like, "Yeah, go away."
And he's like trying to like snatch it away or whatever, and he knocks over a lantern that shattered, the glass shatters, and so he starts like trying to clean it up and he cuts his hand,
and she goes to treat him.
Yes. And she's like, "No, please let me do this." And she like, there's randomly, well, of course there's a handkerchief there, it's the old times, and so she like wraps up his hand and
she does it super gently though. It's like, you need to put pressure
on the wound.
What the fuck are you doing?
I realize she's not a nurse, but it's just,
still,
come on. And so she does it very gently. They make really intimate eye contact again, and then he's like, "Well, I think the day is over, and I think you need to leave." And she's just like, "Okay." And he's like, "Well, I see you tonight at the ball." And she's like, yeah, totally, thanks for the lesson, bye." And that was really helpful.
And so she's trying to leave, and she Eloise sees her, and
well, she also compliments his writing.
Right. She compliments his writing before that. But as she's leaving, Eloise sees her. And then we cut to the Mondridges getting ready for the ball. And Alice is just wanting to kind of just do something not very fancy. And they're like, "Well, let's look at the jewels." And they get this lovely necklace out. And she's happy about that. We then see Colin and Eloise in the carriage going to the ball. Eloise is absurdly upset about Penelope being at the house. And Eloise says Colin might be Penelope's only friend at this point. And she wants her to have friends, but this looks inappropriate because he's an eligible bachelor.
I'm glad she's starting to think that way and not just being like, "Oh, fuck the patriarchy" kind of thing. And she's starting to just be like, I feel like she has grown a bit from last season of, now she knows the consequences of certain actions. Like, you can't just be alone with the guy. Yeah. And it would look weird, and it would probably maybe even ruin her reputation, which she's trying this season. Right. So it would hurt. It would actually hurt. And so I appreciate that she's like, "Well, I don't want her to be friendless, but don't do it in the house." And then it's just like, okay.
And Colin's like, "Look, hey, you're asking if she's okay. She's fine. She's seeking a husband." And Eloise is like, surprised and unreasonably upset about that.
No, she's not upset. She's more just surprised of like, "Oh, well, I thought we were going to be spinsters together." Well, you stopped being friends last season, didn't you?
Yeah,
like you kind of saw that. Well, what she did too.
Eloise also is worried that Penelope's after Colin. And
Eloise doesn't even know about the fact that Penelope had this long standing since childhood crush on Colin is ridiculous.
It's so dumb, but she's like, I just think it won't look right if new people find out about this, which is fair.
Also, she says a husband, that's so unlike her. Had a conversation last season, if I remember correctly, of them in the flower field. And her being like, "I enjoy society." Obviously, she kind of enjoys being the wallflower a bit, but it was the first season of some people actually want to be in society. I actually want to get married someday. Mm-hmm. I want to do this, that, and the other. You've had this conversation before, Eloise. I don't know why you're so shocked. I mean, sure, she may have been reserved in the knowledge that maybe she wouldn't find a husband someday and she could still be friends with Eloise. But come on, girl, you knew. She told you. But then again, Eloise doesn't listen. And so here we are.
It's all about Eloise.
And Colin also tells Eloise, "Well, I'm helping her find one." And she's just like, "But if people find out about that, then that would look weird since you're one of the bachelors of the season." And then she's just like, "That's exactly why we're keeping it private, Eloise." And that's why we thought that through. And Eloise, it's a whole thing. So at the ball, it's the like celestial half moon ball, something or other.
Yeah, something about
full moon ball. Sorry, it's a full moon. The debutantes are working ever so much harder in their curtsies to the queen and to prove that they're trying. And the queen kind of appreciates that. Violet, whilst they're walking up, is talking to Eloise, and she's like, "Well, I hope, as much as I don't want to like push you too hard into the marriage mart like I did last," you didn't last season, but either way.
Right.
she's learning, and she's like, I just want you to make better friends than Cresta Calpert. Yeah. And so please make some more friends and expand your circle a little bit. And she's like, Eloise is like, well, actually, yeah, I'll try. And then some girls like call Eloise over, and she's like, yeah, no, I'll take a turn about the room. And she's still herself, but she is trying to appease
the people,
the masses.
Yes.
And so then Francesca, like when Violet talks to Francesca, she's like, oh, we should go say hi to the queen. And like, Francesca's like, no, actually, we shouldn't. We should go talk to one of the suitors you mentioned before. And Violet's like, okay.
Then there's this really funny sequence where these girls are coming up and they're talking, oh, the Bridgerton brothers and it's Benedict and Colin, and they're drinking lemonade or whatever the hell it is. And the girls are getting kind of aggressive about dancing, but Benedict is just being super fucking loud. Like,
he's very funny.
Yeah, he is. And they're like, isn't it time that you dance? He's like, yes!
He's also ladies.
Well, and it's funny because I'm not clear on, because the girl that he's talking to, Miss So,
not a clue.
When she was presented to the queen, she did her curtsy, and as she's walking away, her mother's using sign language on her, and I wonder if she may be deaf. Her mom maybe deaf. I think
she was deaf.
Is she deaf?
Okay. I think she's deaf.
So yelling at her does not make it better. I'm sorry.
I didn't realize that was the same person.
Yes.
Oh, that's so funny. That's really sad, though. Benedict's family. Oh, no. You're supposed to be the, like, culturally savvy one.
There was no culture savvy.
This is loud and louder.
Yeah.
Anyway, she asked, hey, like, you haven't been... So are you sure it's the same girl?
I think that's the one he's dancing with for sure. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even think about it. Anyway, she asked for him to dance with him. She's like, hey, you haven't danced with anybody. He's like, okay, I'll dance with you. And then Colin doesn't agree to anything because I think what he's doing is mostly just trying to like stay on the show for a little bit longer, because him and Benedict also like don't really like being swarmed in packs.
Because they're Bridgertons
and they look like that. And yeah. So I think Colin's also just trying to like keep an eye out for Penelope so that he can help her first and then all that stuff.
I do like this little sequence with Colin and Penelope. So Penelope.
Well, no, Portia first.
Okay.
Portia tells her sons-in-law to cherish her daughters because they're like pastries. So go ahead.
And Colin make eye contact. Colin goes over to her. Mm-hmm. She compliments his writing again and it says that he makes it look effortless.
And she apologizes.
And she's like, I'd like to read more if you'd let me. And he's like, well, I'll think about it, but I'll make you a deal. It's like the bargaining thing with Daphne and Simon. I'll make you a deal. I will think about it if you speak to some eligible gentleman tonight. And she's like, all right.
All right,
he's like, there's that guy over there whose name I can't remember.
I don't know.
And she goes over and she's doing actually really well with this guy, or so it would seem. But then she's like, well, life is too short to not talk to people, or whatever it is that she says. And he starts getting all upset because apparently his horse died that day. So she goes back to Colin.
Colin
comes up to her and is like, oh, how'd that go? It looked a little weird. And she's like, his horse died. And he starts laughing.
And he's like, you're joking. And she's like, I'm not.
Maybe we should gallop over here. I mean, they're just
so funny. It's adorable. It is very cute. And they're just doing their normal friendship thing, and it's adorable.
And Eloise overhears them, and she keeps staring at them like her head pops around the corner a couple of times. And she's pissed, and she starts talking to Cresta because she's pissed. Because it's almost like she's jealous, in a way, of Colin and Penelope.
I think
they're trying to develop that as a theme because of, like, of things we assume from the books.
That, but also I think she's just jealous that Penelope's having fun without her.
Yeah.
And she can't control that, nor should she try. But whatever.
Yeah, but what she says to Cresta is like, oh, I can't believe, you know, all this is happening. You know, my brother Colin's giving her lessons.
Cresta is just like, whenever I get out of sorts with an acquaintance, I just pretend they're dead. Like, okay.
That doesn't sound really kind either.
But yeah, still. Eloise mentions Colin coaching Penelope, which I don't know why she would ever bring that up. I think obviously she's
upset right now,
right,
for whatever reason.
Right, but there are a bunch of girls standing next to them.
But it's in public to the person who has made Penelope's life, one of the many people who have made Penelope's life a living hell.
Right.
I don't know why you're doing this.
Well, and Krista gets that look, like the look of evil that she gets sometimes.
Well, she also mentions, oh, that could be a scandal if that comes out. Now Louise doesn't bat an eye. She doesn't even be like, hey, this is incompetence, don't tell anybody. She doesn't say anything like that. She just kind of lets it happen. And then some debutantes come over and Eloise just kind of is herself, and they do find it amusing, but the weird thing is it's amusing to them like an act at a circus. Yeah. It's not necessarily, oh, I find a kinship in you. I feel the same way or whatever. It's not like a true friendship. It's more, oh, you are funny sometimes. Like, it's just, it's weird.
Yeah.
And it's clear that it's not a place that she belongs, necessarily. She can be herself, and that's great, but it only lasts so long.
Right.
And then Benedict, after he's done with his dance, goes over and notices Will and Alice showing up, and he welcomes them to the ton and gives them a little mini tour.
Right.
And Alice goes over and, like, gets something to eat. But she also mentions, Benedict, oh yeah, I didn't think that you would be like dancing with anybody. That kind of signals that you're on the market. And he's just like, oh God.
Yeah. And so then he has a conversation with Will, and because Will's all anxious about, how am I supposed to learn all these rules? Rules are weird. And Benedict points out that if you're a married couple, you can do whatever the fuck you want. Mm-hmm. The whole point of this thing is just to keep people getting married.
Yeah.
And, you know, keep the lines of succession and blah, blah, blah.
And then Francesca is just kind of by the, I don't know, lemonade table. And Violet brings over one of the suitors that Lady Danbury and her were talking about.
Right. And he has a great conversation.
Oh, it's very sweet.
He's great.
He's great.
But he's too much for her.
He's a bit too much. They talk about music. They talk about specific pieces of music and how one of them was...
It's a Beethoven's piano trio.
Was written for his lover or whatever.
Right.
And you hear that in the music. And Francesca gets a bit...
Yeah.
Francesca gets a bit overwhelmed.
She's like, I just like the chord progressions.
I just like the chord progressions. I'm sorry. And it's different from Eloise last season, where I found that very annoying with Eloise just being, like, just insulting people.
Right.
Whereas Francesca just gets overwhelmed.
She's just scared.
She's just scared. And
I get her being scared, but what I don't get is, like, he's talking about something that's on your level.
Yeah.
And I recognize this might be the first time you've had a conversation with a guy that's on your level, but you can try to work through how to have that conversation. She doesn't even try.
She needs practice, and this was great practice until it got a little flirtatious and she started backing away a bit.
Yeah.
Then Violet tells Lady Danbury that she's worried Francesca will settle. She's learned from last season with Eloise that she can't push too hard, but even though she wasn't. But she's worried that if she doesn't push Francesca hard enough, she just will settle for the easiest thing.
Right.
And she doesn't want that for her child. She wants everybody to have a love match. And so she's concerned about that. I do too. And Lady Danbury is like, okay, well, why don't we just let her be herself? And so she takes Francesca to a different room and we'll talk about her
later. There comes the funniest part of this entire episode. So the Featheringtons,
which is surprising that it's the Featherington,
and it is. So Lady Featherington goes to talk to her daughters, and you know, they start having this conversation, and Philip is like, oh, we had sex before we came. And Lady Featherington's like, Portia's like, talk about this here. Let's go in the other room. And she turns to Prudence when they get in the other room, and Prudence's like, and we started, but I just didn't enjoy it. And Portia's like, look, it's hard for women, but you know, when he inserts himself,
before we get to that really quickly, I'm sorry. I know. I was going to talk about Prudence for a second. Mm-hmm. Prudence in the earlier conversation, I did not mention. She's like, oh, why would I want to be having sex with my husband when I could be showing off the fact that I have one? Mm-hmm. And so she's not finding pleasure in that because she wants attention and all that stuff. But also I think that the guy's just dumb enough not to be giving her any pleasure. So that's unfortunate
for her. He's very full of himself.
Very full of himself.
But, so she,
but he also kind of adores her in a way. It's complicated. Sorry, go ahead. You get to do the punchline.
I already started.
Fine, then redo it.
All right, so... Portia's trying to explain to Prudence, like, look, when women's pleasure is complicated when he inserts himself, and Phil was like, inserts himself where? And Portia's like, oh my god, she's like,
she's been married for like 2 years.
Yeah, what have you two been doing? And Philippa says, well, we kiss. And then he makes an odd sound and he goes and changes his britches. And then Prudence is like, he has his britches on? It's like, oh my God.
So
clearly she has to explain the birds and the bees to these children.
Portia turns away and she's like, why must I be punished at every turn? Like talking to God. Anyway, Lady Danbury goes up to the queen and is like, hey, I noticed this portrait that I really like in one of these rooms. Come with me. And so the queen goes, and the debutantes start to get worried because they don't seem to be dazzling the queen enough.
But Eloise is excited because, oh, great, I can go get chocolate now. Then the girls start gossiping.
Well, they asked for gossip. And Cressida says, oh, I don't have any, which... good for you, Cressida. That is some character development.
Yes, yes.
You got some dirt on someone you don't like, which is Penelope, and you didn't share it.
Yes.
Props to you, but that's the bare minimum.
Yeah.
Anyway, Penelope then is at the refreshments table, and she's talking to this lord at Remington.
Mm-hmm.
He's in a wheelchair. That's not important, but it's a distinguishing characteristic from the other suitors.
Right.
They discuss gossip, and he's like, oh, I love a good gossip. I, as soon as Lady Whistledown arrives, I immediately take it and I like chew it up and eat it up and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Penelope's like, oh my gosh, you like me, the other me, the alter ego me. And she, of course, she lights up like a firework.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just like, oh, okay. And she gets a little bit more comfortable. And then Colin is looking, he's like talking to some friends, but he's watching very, very closely. And he sees that it's going well.
Right.
And he's looking on proudly like, oh, I did a good job helping her out there.
Yeah.
Even though this was basically all her.
Right.
every way. But okay. And then Colin goes over to Penelope and she's like, Lord Remington's going to call on me tomorrow. And Colin is happy for her. But by the way, the song, the string quartet version of Jealous by Nick Jonas is playing. I forgot that was the song that was playing. I didn't notice it the first time. I'm glad you pointed it out.
Yeah, I love that song too.
He's like, oh my gosh, that's great, Penelope. I knew you could do it. And then you start hearing whispers around them and people looking at them.
And they're this horrible mother.
Yes. And the rumor of Colin helping Penelope find a suitor and a husband this season has started to like go around the ball.
Yeah.
And there are people calling her hopeless. Like, why would he want to help such a hopeless case? She's going to be on the shelf forever. Right. And Penelope's just standing there. Like, it starts going, like, it goes into a Dutch angle, but it's actually appropriate. And she's just like, oh my God, it's my worst fucking nightmare.
Right. And so Colin's pissed on her behalf. And he goes to
No. Colin goes up to a group of people because he hasn't heard like the full thing of what people have been saying. She's just hearing whispers and noticing a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes over and he's like, hey, what are you guys talking about? And they're like, it's very noble of you to like help out this wallflower, but like, come on, man, like, what are you doing?
And why are you bothering
with her? And Penelope, he looks back at Penelope and Penelope's just like on the brink of just destruction. And she's just like, oh my God. And so she leaves. She's walking out. Colin immediately is like, oh my God. And he starts, he's following her. And the worst part is Penelope is passing by these women. And one of them goes, I can't wait to hear what Whistledown has to say about this. Because you got it right. Penelope has to write about her own suffering.
Right.
So she's walking out. Eloise notices and she's like, oh shit. And she starts walking out as well as Colin. Penelope goes ahead and like gets into her carriage. And Colin notices Eloise walking out as well, trying to get to Penelope. And he confronts her. He's like,
Are you serious? Did you tell people? Well, he knows she told people because nobody else said, he didn't say anything and Penelope didn't say anything.
Right.
And so, and she's like, well, I did tell Cressida. And he's like, you told Cressida of all people? Whatever happened between the two of you, she doesn't deserve this.
Yeah.
And Eloise is just like, oh no, this is on me pretty much. Mm-hmm. And so then we go over to the queen. Who's walking into the room that Lady Danbury's ushering her into.
And Francesca's playing. You can hear her. And it's gorgeous. She's playing beautifully.
And she's impressed and names her the Sparkler because she's impressed by the fact that she's playing for herself and not for the queen and trying to show off her talent. She's just doing it because she finds pleasure in it.
And loves it.
And then we see
the Mondritches back at their house. And Will is kind of like, we're going to sleep in the same bedroom because I've decided. And
what I wrote was Will shows up in Alice's room and they decide to screw the rules and each other.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's basically it. She's afraid they're going to lose everything, but he's kind of like, fuck it.
Lose what? Yeah, exactly. Like, are you kidding?
We also get kind of a montage thing where we see the Featherington girls having sex and Mr. Cheddar is so ecstatic. He's the one who was like doing it.
He's not edging himself anymore.
Right, not doing it in the britches anymore.
Honestly, yay. Mr. Cheddar's really growing on me even more this season. Like, I loved him throughout the first and second seasons because, like, we didn't mention in the first episode, as soon as Penelope shows up and like gets her cool, like, off getting her coat off moment, all of the Featheringtons think that everyone's looking at them specifically. But then he's like, nope, they're not looking at us. Yeah. And then Philip is like, what the hell? But he's very supportive of everybody because he's a sweet person.
He is a sweet person.
Anyway, Will, that whole thing happens with Will. Then Penelope is crying as she has to write about herself and ruin her reputation.
Oh, you skipped. Lady Danbury gets a letter that she's
This is before.
No.
No, Penelope cries. She has to write about herself, ruin her reputation. Lady Danbury gets a letter about a person coming to visit and is a bit annoyed. Then Penelope sulks at her window, and Colin is reading the Lady Whistledown article about Penelope and him and all that stuff, and he's looking out of his window, probably trying to catch a glimpse, which is something that Penelope usually does, but now he's doing it too. Now we're getting to the similar level, Colin. Yay!
So, Eloise, the next morning, Eloise is pissed with Cressida.
Mm-hmm.
And she says that, like,
How could you do that?
And Cressida points out, I didn't. You just were really indiscreet and loud, and these other girls were listening. And when you talk about people being cruel, you need to look at yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I'm like,
Cressida's growing on me. Good for you, Cressida. If this was more last episode, but I think Cressida had to do something horrible just to like have her learn a lesson and all that stuff, and now she's trying to be better. Yeah. So that's good.
Yeah. So
Featherington
then confronts Penelope, like, "Oh my God, is this Whistledown thing true?" And Penelope's like, "No." And yes, it's true. And you know, God forbid I should go looking for love. And Lady Featherington's like, "You just don't understand. You'll never find a husband." Who says this to their child?
Well, she says she's being unreasonable about what she can achieve.
Right, but that's what she's talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, who the fuck does this?
You're not going to find somebody in your third year on the marriage mark, even though your sisters found people.
Like, you know, a lot of people who have had successful
relationships. She just has no faith in her child.
Can I do this? Of course you can.
Yay! Okay, so there are going to be several parts of this first part that I want to take over, and this is one of them. So that night, Penelope, there's like a fade to like night where she's just sitting at her window the entire time.
All day.
That's so funny to me. She's turning into a Crown character. Anyway, her maid shows up, and again, unnamed maid for the win, and she's just like, hey, you have a visitor. And so she takes Penelope to the garden for Colin.
Surprise!
Surprise! Give away. Apparently Colin like nods to the maid, and the maid leaves, and he's like, oh yeah, I bribed her for a moment alone, and which is so funny. Mm-hmm. And so Penelope, he's like, I'm just wanting to make sure you're okay, and she's just like,
honestly, it's my fault. I was a stupid girl with stupid dreams to think that I might find any kind of love or companionship this season. I'm just going to die alone. It's going to be awful. I hate myself. He's like, girl, it's okay. No, don't say that about yourself. He becomes very defensive of her.
Right.
And he's just like, no, you can't say that. And she's just like, what do you mean I can't say that? That's what's happening. And he's just like, no, you're good. And Penelope, in a moment of desperation and just wanting to feel something, because like he's being defensive of her, and their Lady Whistledown is just like, but you can be reckless and get hope.
Yeah.
And so there's a moment, and Penelope is like, hey, I'm going to ask you a favor. Can you kiss me? It doesn't have to mean anything. I just know that I have this feeling that I'm going to be on the shelf forever. I may never find a husband. I'm a spinster with no prospects. It's gotten even worse for me now. I'm screwed. I could die tomorrow. And he's like, you're not going to die tomorrow. And she says, but I could, and it would kill me. And he says, you'd already be dead. I died when that happened. That was so funny. Cute. And also, that's just me. Like somebody tells me like a joke, like, or like something like that, I'd just be like, but you're good. You wouldn't, but you'd already be dead. Anyway, she says, please. And he steps up to her, and because they're in the garden, like under an arch, it's very beautifully shot. Mm-hmm. He steps up to her, puts his hand on her face, and pecks her on the mouth.
Well, it's just a very gentle.
It's a gentle kiss. It's I wouldn't call it actually a peck. It's a shorter but like sweet kiss. And then they pull away slightly, and then they go back for more.
and you can tell that he is stunned.
He is in shock that this. He's like, huh?
Hormones.
Hormones. And they're going back for more, and eventually she pulls away this time, oddly enough. Mm-hmm. She pulls away and then says, thank you, and then leaves. And he's just standing there outside of this archway to her garden, and he's just like, huh?
Thunderclap.
And he's just confused by his newfound feelings, and it's just really a lie.
Yeah.
It's wild.
It is. So what were your best parts of this episode?
The kiss.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
The lessons, I really like that they added that. It's not in the book. I like that they've added it. It makes sense for this. The book makes sense in the timeline that it's created of 10 years after 10 years on the marriage mark, nothing going on. This makes sense for what's happening now, and she might actually still have a chance on the marriage mark at this point. And Colin and Penelope, just in general, like their back and forth, their banter, like him trying to make her feel comfortable and herself and giving her good advice. The humor is so fucking funny. Like specifically, Philippa being clueless and, all that. And like, I could die tomorrow. You're not going to die tomorrow, but I couldn't even kill me. You'd already be dead. And then Francesca, I like Francesca in this. She's less annoying than Eloise. She just doesn't want to draw attention to herself. She more just wants to do things on the down low, quickly, quietly, she likes quiet. And we find out more later. And then the book references I really liked, like the backstory of the bonnet falling off and making him like fall off a horse is very funny. And the whole book thing, the journal thing leading to the wounded hand and the asking for a kiss. I was actually kind of surprised they actually did that, but I'm glad they did.
Yeah.
And then the card game with the Bridgertons and Hyacinth winning is very funny to me. And Benedict just yelling.
Yeah.
Him being like, yes! it's funny. And the costumes. Yeah. Are gorgeous. Yeah, I can say that for the entire season, but especially I love the costumes this episode. Go ahead.
The only things I wrote down were the kiss, the Featheringtons. I just find that whole sex discussion
it's
absolutely
funny.
Hilarious. And I never ever thought Featheringtons would be a best part, but there it is.
There we go.
And I really do love this development, and it's particularly Colin development. I started to think about it. It's like, you know, we haven't actually seen Penelope's, you know, other than her longing for him, Penelope like actually supporting him, other than this mention of, hey, she writes you letters.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what the content of that is. We don't know, but she does in this episode. She's very encouraging about his writing. She's very thoughtful in what she says. And you can see that there are reasons why he would be attracted to her. Mm-hmm. I mean, before that, it was all just kind of like
talk.
Not just talk. It was all him, not her. There was not a lot of balance there. It was just her like looking at him saying he's gorgeous, as opposed to like her engaging him and talking to him and being supportive of him. She does try to tell him about Marina in the first season. It's mostly him doing stuff for her in the second season, even. With the whole rubies and Lord Featherington.
But she also, when they had that one conversation at the wedding about his purpose and he finally saw her a little bit, she was able to like talk about how.
Right, but that it's one.
It's better balanced.
It's better balanced in this episode. And it makes you see that there is parity, and that's important. So I liked that. That was all I read, Jim.
Okay.
What were your worst parts?
Will and Alice being boring.
I almost put it as a unnecessary part.
I think it's not a worst part necessarily. I don't mind Will and Alice, and it's not taking up that much time, but whenever we go over to them, like just like cut over to them, I'm just like, okay, and you can just go and sleep in the same bed. Like, it's not the end of the world. You don't need to worry about that. Like, it just feels like a non-issue, and they're fine. I just don't care. Penelope's horrible flirting. Lord Whistledown in his erotica.
Doesn't bother me. Why did that bother you?
I like better in the book that he's talking about how he's more articulate about cities being beautiful than him being like, I had sex. It's like, we know, dude. You look like that. We know you've had sex. But I mean, what the hell are you doing? Maybe it doesn't bother me that much. It doesn't bother me that much. Actually, we'll delete that. Eloise spreading the secret it's not her place. She shouldn't have said it. And I like, but the one thing about this is that most of my worst parts for this episode are kind of just medium parts for me, because it's like, yes, Eloise shouldn't have said that, but it leads to her learning a lesson about how her words also have impact, not just Lady Whistledowns, not just all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then Portia's talk with Penelope of just being like, you have to be very gonna be very clear, you have no prospects and you're never gonna find a husband ever. It's like, are you kidding me? That is not the way to parent your child.
Yeah, that really is terrible. So yeah, Eloise spreading the stuff I really don't like. And I put Cressa, but I think
Cressa's not a worst part.
She's not a worst part. And the Portia and Penelope conversation I think is just terrible. What grade did you give this?
I don't think you're going to agree, but I gave it an A.
Yeah, I gave it an A minus. It's not, I think one of the biggest differences for the two of us for this season is I am not as invested in it as you are, this couple. Like them, but I've got this broader, I like other Bridgerton couples
we literally had a whole podcast episode talking about which one Penelope and Colin have never been first for me. But I like the way they're doing their season.
I do too.
I think it's better than the books thus far, and so, which is odd because the last two have not been better than the books really. And so
I don't know.
Daphne's might have been actually,
yeah.
But certainly not Antony and Kate's. But no, it just not. I think, I don't know, I just like the way they've been doing it. It might be an A minus because I think there is, I hesitate giving like a higher grade than an A this season thus far, so I might give it an A minus.
Yeah.
But I will say I did enjoy it better than the last episode in a way, because you got a little bit of drama, you got a little bit of character growth from like Eloise and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think the first episode I gave an A minus because it's a really good setup episode.
And that's
how it's designed.
Yeah, and I think it gives you some drama. It gives you some good, like, intimate moments with Penelope and Colin, our main couple. Thus far in these like seasons, you have not gotten a kiss this early.
Oh, ever. That's great!
Yes, I like, love.
Yay!
Actually, I'm giving this an A, but this early.
And I do love
the
that.
Fact. I just thought about this. It's kind of a spoiler alert for this part. for this first part, you get something sexy or equivalent romantic in every single episode this part. And I love that. Like, yeah, you got Anthony and Kate last episode. You get the kiss this episode. And you get some other stuff in later episodes. And so it's just, I just like that they're not wasting our time because they know what we're here for.
And you know, honestly, I think that's part of the reason season two sucked.
It has nothing. Benedict got the most action in season two, well, which is and ridiculous. There wasn't
much. I mean, so like, you're watching this for smut, right? And so season one, at least you had Anthony banging
Sienna.
Yeah, and you had like something that, and it is passionate and continuous and semi-monogamous, or it looks monogamous. Whereas in season two, it's like no one is doing anything with anyone.
It's just a lot of longing and very, very slow burn.
And in season one, so you had Anthony and Sienna, you had Daphne and Simon once they get together. I mean, you got like a lot. And a lot.
Benedict and his art orgy.
Right, exactly. The whole purpose of this show is that. And so
it's Regency smut.
It is Regency smut. And we like that.
We do. That's what we're here for.
At least we're getting something. And I agree with you. At least we're getting something every episode that is.
Yeah. They now, I feel like they've learned from their mistakes in season two. And it's a shame that they haven't.
We have time to come.
Thus far, they have learned from their mistakes of, we want what we want and you need to respect that. Yeah. And so they see that. They also know that, and again, like maybe some people have issues with this fast pace. I don't care. I like the fast pace. Well, it's way better than the slow fast pace. Yeah.
Here's the other thing. They've known each other forever. We don't need to like.
You don't have the get to know you period. Yeah, exactly. Well, you get the new get to know you period, but it's very brief and you don't, you're just learning new things about the person that you've already known for your entire life.
Yeah. And it is, you know, nice context. I think it's better written than some of the stuff we've seen. So yeah, no.
I will say I have been, the one thing I feel like this season is lacking in a way is the writing for the family scenes.
Yeah, I agree.
Because there, when I saw like stills from this episode of the card game, I was expecting so much more.
Yeah.
But, and not to say it wasn't good, and I'm glad I get to see the rest of the Bridgertons as well, but especially the younger ones. But I'm just kind of left wanting more. And I think the problem is Anthony's a major part of that. And Anthony's not available.
Right. So they're trying to play up the Gregory Hyacinth thing, which is not a bad idea. Yeah. And they give her like, you know, when she's winning, she's like, what, do you think I'm magic?
And then Benedict's like, well, that was a trick.
Yeah, exactly. So it is a little cute, but it's very minimal. And I feel like
they put a lot of effort into like the romantic scenes, which I appreciate. You should, because that's the main part, but I feel like the family scenes have suffered for it. Yeah. And again, it's not like awful. It's not like unwatchable. It's not like the Featherington season two. Oh. It's more just, I know what those scenes could be. It could be the bros fencing. Yeah. It could be the dinner scene from season one. It could be a lot of Benedict
brushing off the
yeah, exactly. It could be little moments like that. And I feel like those are just, I'm just finding them a little bit lacking, just a little bit.
Yeah.
And of all the subplots, oddly enough, it's the Modriches that I just don't care about. And so, sorry, it just is.
It is. And I'm interested to see where this goes. There's going to be some fun and there are going to be some new characters in the next couple episodes, so we're really looking forward to talking about that.
Yeah,
we hope that you join us, and
cheers.